Breaking It Down with Frank McKay. This is 103.9 LI News Radio.
I'd like to welcome everyone to Breaking It Down. Frank McKay here, but much more importantly, Don Most, a wonderful performer, singer. Most people know him from his work in Happy Days, one of the great sitcoms of all time. Ralph Mouth was his character, and everyone knew him and loved him and just tremendous. But he has a show, and we've had him on this show before. He has a show that goes around that is just getting rave reviews from everybody imaginable, and it's Don Most Sings and Swings, and also a CD called Mostly Swing. Don Most, how are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah. Well, anytime. I'm always thrilled to have you on. And this show is just everyone I talk to just raves about it. And I imagine you're getting the same response, or you wouldn't be doing it.
Yeah, it's been great. I just had a show a couple nights ago at a club out here in L.A., and it went just, you know, as well as I guess you could expect. And you know, people just loving what I'm doing. And, you know, when I started doing this about 2 years ago, the truth of the matter is, and we probably spoke about this last time I was on, I'm going back to what I originally did before I was acting. I loved singing way back from when I was pretty young, and I was singing up in the Catskill Mountains when I was 14, 15 years old. And then I took a turn into I got into an acting class, and I really got into that. And then things went in that direction, and I put the music aside for all these years, once in a while doing musical theater, but never putting together the kind of act that I always dreamed of, which is doing, you know, the great jazz standards, the great American songbook, swing and big band kind of jazz. And it's just been such a blast. It's I get high doing it, and what's great is that people seem to be having a similar experience. So it's been really it's been a wonderful time for me lately.
Well, I'm sincerely saying that everyone that has seen it, that I've spoken to, people that heard about it here on the show that went in and checked it out, a couple real Bobby Darin fans just adored it, and you know, I imagine that's a good market for you.
Yeah, well, a huge influence for me. You know, I love all the great, I love Sinatra and Dino and Tony Bennett and Nat King Cole and all Mel Torme. I love all the great singers, but for whatever reason, Bobby connected with me in a way that I can't understand. And ever since I saw him when I was pretty young, and I bought his albums and would sing along to them and just love Bobby. And so I do, you know, I do a bunch of his songs, and that's probably, you know, what I mean is I love it all, but there's something extra special and magic about that for me, and people react to that in a parallel way, it seems.
In retrospect, when you planned it out, and you know, we all know how plans go, how on target to your expectations is the show now, looking back on it 2 years ago?
Good question. I think it's gone beyond my expectations, because when I first started out, you know, like I said, it had been such a long time since I'd really done any singing of this kind, since I was pretty young. And but for some reason, I just, you know, the timing seemed right. This kind of music was not really in favor in the 70s and 80s. So that was part of the reason I didn't pursue it, because if you weren't established in that kind of genre, it was pretty hard to do, because that's not the music that was, you know, popular. But then with the resurgence of the Great American Songbook, with artists like, you know, Michael Bublé and Diana Krall and Harry Connick and Steve Tyrell and many others, that I saw that the opportunity, it was like a window, and I said, oh, this is the music that I've loved since I was a kid, and I'm going to do it. And as long as I'm having fun, and if people seem to be enjoying it, I'm going to continue doing it. But I didn't really know what to expect, and it just, I have to say, it exceeded my expectations, because people from the first show were reacting so strongly to it, and it's just been getting, you know, I think better and better. And some of the musicians in my band, you know, saying it's just they can't get over how it just seems that I just seem to be getting better and better and better, and it's just growing. So I'm just enjoying the ride and love the process, love the music so much, and love performing live.
Don Most is the voice you're hearing, Frank McKay here. But more importantly, Don Most, and you know his work from Happy Days and so many other things. But Don Most Sings and Swings is the theme. And again, a few years, Don Most has been doing a very, very popular show of a music that's seen a resurgence. Don, you mentioned Buble and Diana Krall. When you saw Buble, for example, emerging, did it immediately click that, hey, you know, this might be an opportunity, or did it take you a little while before you kind of, saw potential there, or was it an immediate thought?
I think it was a thing of that it accumulated because, you know, really started, I'd say, Harry Connick started doing it even before Buble, and then when Tony Bennett did it, MTV thing, and he started having this comeback, so to speak, and following even among young people, and then Diana Krall. So it was sort of a combination of all that. And then I think Buble might have been like the icing on the cake for me,
Right.
And it was like, hey, if I'm going to do this, I'd better start doing it now,
Well, I think it's amazing if you look back on your history that you were into this music at the same time when people were into, you know, psychedelic rock and hippie music and so forth. And you've told me in the past on past interviews that you had actually brought it to Gary Marshall and said, hey, can we build something around this? Tell us about that. Tell us about Gary Marshall's reaction to the idea of bringing swing into Happy Days episodes.
Well, it's not quite exactly like that. What happened was, I unbeknownst to me, you know, in the very first season of Happy Days, early on, I was happy to be doing to get the part and working on the show and trying to do the best that I could with my character. And then what happened was somewhere in the first several weeks of the show, Anson Williams, who played Potsy, and Anson and I are wonderful, tight friends, but he went to Gary, and because Anson had done musical theater and had done a bunch of singing, and he went to Gary and he said, you know, you're doing a show about the 50s, and you've got, you know, the drive-in, and you've got the feeling of that, and the girls in the poodle skirts, and all of the 50s ambiance, but the music was such a part of it. What you should let us do is like form a band, you know, and because I sing, and Gary said, oh, so you're a singer, and you know, and Anson said, yeah, and so there's a very funny chapter in a book that Anson wrote called Singing to a Bulldog, where he explains how he got Gary, they convinced Gary to let him form this band, and I won't give it away because it's a funny chapter and people might want to read it. But
good book, by the way. Really, really good book.
Yeah, it is. It's really good. So so I talk about this in the show sometimes. So if people come down, they'll hear my end of it. When I went to Gary, because I said, hey, you know, I went to Gary to plead my case that, you know, I sing too. So, you know, maybe I could get some spots once in a while to do something, you know. And I won't talk too much more about it because I want people to hear it in person. But
sure.
But that's there is definitely some history and stories about. But I didn't go to him advocating to do swing. I it was more about the 50s because I knew that swing wasn't really maybe appropriate for the teenagers that, you know, forming a band in Arnold's, but that we would do 50s music.
Right. Oh, I get it. Yeah. Right. Yeah. I misspoke in that sense, but it's very interesting, especially when you have that kind of audience. And I'll remind people again, Don Most is here. You know Don's work from all over, but certainly Happy Days, You guys, and I'm going to remind people that this wasn't like there was 500 channels at this time. You had the three networks, so you had millions. It was like I don't even know what to describe, a presidential debate. I mean, more people would watch Happy Days than may watch certain presidential debate. And I mean, the big debates, just an amazing audience.
You're right. I talk about this sometimes, when we speak in front of people. But exactly right. With only the three networks, and we would be getting, 50, 60 million people watching us. So it was like a quarter of the country or something. It would be watching us every Tuesday. So it was very different back then. And it's hard for people today to, I guess, really even comprehend that with the choices and the diffusion that you get now of viewership between internet and cable and VOD and streaming and all that,
It was such a big show, and I was a huge fan of Happy Days, and I loved the shows. By the way, the early shows with the laugh track
one camera shows before we went in front of an audience.
Yeah, I loved it. Not that I didn't like the others, but I mean, I really loved it. It just was that's as good as TV gets in my book. Even now, I mean, it just holds up so well. Your audience had this, it was such a huge audience that even rumors became news. And I remember being, 9, 10 years old, and there was this rumor that went around school that Henry Winkler died. And I don't know if you remember this, or if I mentioned it to you last time, but it was on news. Network news covered the rumor just to dispel the rumor. It was amazing.
Yeah, I vaguely remember that when that spread around. I don't know how it got started, but Henry became, as the Fonz became the number one, figure on television, and it was, and I witnessed it firsthand, and it was crazy. Our show catapulted to number one, and then he was as hot as you could be. And I traveled around with Henry, on some of these publicity tours. And it was like, we were the Beatles or something when we would show up somewhere, And it was quite an experience to go through that firsthand and witness that and see how his character, started from a peripheral character like mine did, and then grew to become what it was and like I said, the number one figure in television.
Yeah, but again, just to point out, a rumor, and when was the last time that a rumor of a sitcom star made network news to dispel the rumor? It was a sitcom star, but it was so big. It was so tremendous. And, you guys hit on all levels. What about, I know you're close to Anson now. Who were your close friends on the set? Were you close with Ron?
Yeah. When we were doing the show, we were very close. Ron and I shared a deep love of baseball and film and everything. So we were great friends and played ball together and went to games and World Series and all that and went to movies and discussed film and enjoyed our work on the show together, and we were all really close. Henry and I, were very close and it was a family with Tom and Mary is almost like surrogate parents. And Jerry Paris was, like my uncle. He was the director of Happy Days and an amazing, amazing guy, a genius comedic director. And, he had probably more influence on the show than anybody on a day-to-day level. So we were just a great, it was one of those fortuitous sort of gatherings of minds and spirit. Whoever cast the show, you have to give the Gary Marshall and the other exec producers a lot of credit for how for putting this group together, because it worked like magic.
Well, Don Most, again, is the voice that you're hearing. Here's another Happy Days question, if you don't mind. I remember in a past interview, you said that you realized Henry Winkler was going to be an absolute star when They asked him to to do something, and he walked up to the mirror, and he went to comb his hair, and then he realized it was perfect, you know, as this character right. would, and he just gave the thumbs up, and that was it, and you realize, hey, this guy's got it, whatever the hell it is, he's got it. Let me ask you the same question about Ron Howard, because he's got something else. I mean, you know, obviously he's a star, he's got charisma, but he had something else, and he had a love of movies. He was even when he was Opie, they talked about him having a camera with him at all times. When was the first time that you saw Ron and said, you know what, there's something about him that we can see? Yeah, well, you talk about that.
Sure. Well, I guess there were two things that really informed me. First was, when we would go see movies together and talk about them, and I could tell his knowledge was pretty, he'd been in the business since he was 3.5 years old. And so he was coming at it from a very different place than I was. He had gone through the acting thing and was now had his eyes and goals set on directing. And so he talked about it in a different way. Then even in a bigger way, how I saw it was he came to me, probably in around the third season of the show, somewhere like that, and said he wanted to make an experimental film and direct it. And so he could have film to show to prove his ability to move into directing. So he asked me if I wanted to work with him on creating the story and playing the lead in it. And so I did. I said, yeah, that'd be great. Let's do it. So we worked together on building the story, and then brought in a writer and an actress friend. And we started, we got the script together, and then he put a little crew together, and we were shooting on weekends because we were doing Happy Days during the week. And then on weekends, we were shooting all day, making this experimental film. And then Ron was directing me. Mm-hmm. So I was firsthand able to, experience his sort of pervasive knowledge and mastery that he already had. And that's when I knew that he definitely had a future and that he could be a successful director. Did I know that he would become one of the, top directors in Hollywood? I don't know that I could have predicted that, but I knew he had the goods, I knew he had the goods to be a terrific director.
If you had to take a guess, and maybe it's not a guess, maybe you had just he had said it right outright, but who was he heavily influenced by that you could see? Was it Gary Marshall? Was it Jerry Paris? Who was a real big influence on Ron that he had worked with?
Well, he'll readily tell you that Jerry was a big influence on him, but he had the great opportunity of working with a lot of other people. George Lucas directed him in Graffiti, and so he got to see a lot of how George worked. I remember him talking. He did a movie called The Shootist, where he worked with John Wayne, opposite yep. John Wayne, and I think Don Siegel was the director, and he was a pretty well-known director of Westerns and certain other kinds of films. And I remembered him talking about learning a lot from him. And then he was a student of it, some people like John Ford and some of the great old directors, he knew them all. I remember going to watch, at Paramount Studios, we snuck into a screening of Chinatown, directed by Roman Polanski, and then afterwards we'd be breaking down the movie, so he was a student of that, and all the years that he had worked with different directors, I think he just absorbed it, a lot of different people.
Well, listen, we're coming up on a break. Don, do we have you for a second segment?
Yeah, I could do that.
Frank McKay here. We'll be back with more from Don Most right after this.
Breaking It Down with Frank McKay. This is 1039 LI News Radio.
I'd like to welcome everyone back to Breaking It Down. Frank McKay here, but much more importantly, Don Most. And most people, I'd have to say, know him from Happy Days. His role as Ralph Mouth, and really one of the most memorable, most popular sitcoms of all time, Happy Days. And Don, welcome back.
Oh, thank you. Thanks so much.
I was just thinking when you said George Lucas and you know, Roger Corman, you didn't mention, but I mean, he's another guy that Ron worked
right.
with. And, you know, I know they did the 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon, and it goes there. You ever do the 6 degrees of Don Most in your mind? I mean, is there anybody that's not a few degrees away from that crew that you worked with? And I mean, think about it. Let's just name some of the people, right? Of course, we mentioned Henry Winkler, Ron Howard, but Gary Marshall's there, Jerry Paris.
Right.
And he's got such an extensive resume. And of course, who they broke up, Penny Marshall, and who she worked, Tom Hanks, right, from that.
Yeah, he came. Yeah, he did an episode. It was after I left the show, he did a show. And then, of course, Robin Williams kind of broke out on our show. And then there's Penny and Cindy Williams. And then and one of the writers of the original pilot was Rob Reiner.
Wow. I didn't know that.
Yeah, he was one of the writers of our pilot. And I guess if I really stopped to think, it would probably that list would extend far beyond. But we worked, like we talked about earlier, it was an incredible group of people that I got to work with. And I certainly relish all those memories.
Well, I know what you were listening to, you know, what style of music you were listening to, back growing up. What were you watching? What were some of your favorite shows? And you know, I shouldn't be presumptuous, but were you watching sitcoms? Were you watching movies? What was your deal growing up?
Probably all of it. I loved watching a lot of the old movies, you know, that would come on. Million Dollar Movie, it was a big favorite of mine, and that would show. That's where I first saw the Jolson story, which got me really hooked when I was 9 years old, and that got me hooked in the whole into this world of singing and performing. But I used to love. I watched a lot of sitcoms. Ironically, Dick Van Dyke Show was a favorite of mine, and then because Jerry Paris directed the Dick Van Dyke Shows, and then there I was working with Jerry later on. But a lot of the sitcoms and the variety shows too, you know, like they would have the Kraft Music Hall and shows like a lot of different variety shows, Ed Sullivan, and watching all those acts. And some of the dramas, I remember loving The Fugitive was a favorite show of mine. The Twilight Zone, the original, I was a huge fan of some of that kind of TV. And listening, I would listen, you know, I mean, you brought up I was a teenager in the mid and late 60s, and the music then is what we look at, call now classic rock and all kinds of music from that period. I loved that music too, because there was a real renaissance of things happening then, of where they were converging rock with blues and jazz and folk and everything. And it was great, but it was still what was really in my blood was the other kind of music. And, you know, I'm sure a lot of my peers thought it was a little weird that I liked that kind of music, which they looked at as their parents' and grandparents' music, you know? But I used to listen to WNEW in New York, and William B. Williams was the DJ that would play all the kinds of music that we're talking about, Sinatra and Darren and Nat King Cole and all that kind of stuff.
It's very interesting. And, you know, you mentioned Jerry Paris as being like an uncle to you.
And, yeah.
You know, I mean, that's, you know, nice uncle to have. What kind of guy was he? Was he nurturing? Was he a storyteller? Did he say, you know, an advice giver? What was Jerry Paris like?
He was all of that. Everything you just mentioned, that's pretty somehow psychic of you, because he was exactly those things. He was incredibly nurturing. He was a storyteller, and he was a funny man, and he would keep us in stitches. As a matter of fact, to a good degree, I started, you know, using Jerry as a model for my character, because at the beginning, if you talked about the show in the beginning, the first 2 years when it was on camera, if you look at those episodes, my character was not as much like he was a wise guy, you know, and he had a sarcastic sense of humor and all that. But he thought he was kind of cool with his cars and whatnot. And he wasn't the class clown that he turned out to be later on in those years that we went in front of an audience. And that started coming more and more, kind of basing it on Jerry, on Jerry's kind of humor. And I, as a matter of fact, you know, my famous catchphrase of "I still got it," which is kind of part of the vernacular right today, you know, and that it was started back then, you know, when I used it on the show. Well, I kind of borrowed or stole that from Jerry. Jerry, we used to, you know, he'd tell these jokes and if he scored and we would all start cracking up, you know, he would just go, "Yeah, I still got it," you know, something like that. And then one day I decided, without telling anyone, to use that on an episode when Ralph told a joke. So, and then it went over so good that, you know, the writers started writing it in all the time. But Jerry would give us advice about, you know, because we were young and he'd seen a lot and been through a lot. So he would offer us advice about the business, about acting, about a lot of the things to look out for, and tell great stories. And he loved actors, you know. He was a great director, but he loved actors, and he loved working with them and getting them to, you know, be the best they could be and do the best they could do at any given moment.
Frank McKay here with Don Most. You know, it's interesting. You brought up catchphrases, and at some point, did it become a necessity for, was there any like formal conversation where somebody says, you know what, the catchphrases are working to develop the characters, or the writers love these catchphrases. Everybody's got to have a catchphrase. I mean, was there ever this conversation? Was there this meeting where, you know, even when Scott Baio came on later, right? He had a catchphrase like right away. Was there any point early on where either Gary Marshall or Jerry Paris or one of the writers said, "Hey guys, we want to develop," and part of it is to have this familiar catchphrase?
You know, I do recall vaguely discussions about it. I don't think we were directly involved. I think the writers and Gary talked about it, and then it would sort of filter down to us. But it became evident that there was a conscious effort to create some. And I don't know whether, maybe because at the time on Good Times, I remember Jimmy Walker had a dynamite, you know, that his catchphrase. And maybe they decided, oh, we needed some, or maybe we had some first. I can't remember, but, you know, Sit On It became one of those. And you know, and Henry as the Fonz, it was and then I think when Chachi came in, there definitely was a conscious, you know, decision and effort to come up with something. And he had wah, 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 and Al had yep, 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 yep. And, you know, and, or no, that was, yeah, he had that.
That was him, Al, yeah.
Yeah. And Ron had, I can't even remember. But I think there was a definite conscious effort to come up with stuff. Because it did, like you said, it did seem to be working, and the audience would love it when they hear it, and seemed the catchphrases caught on.
You know what? Ron would sing Blueberry Hill, right? Whenever he was thinking of romance.
That's right. That would be his thing, kind of, right?
All right. So there was. Let's talk, if you don't mind, about jumping the shark, because you talk about vernacular changing now. I mean, once a week I'll hear the term "jump the shark," and you're familiar, right? You're familiar with jump the shark?
Oh yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, as as the show was moving on or whatever, when did you feel, if ever, the show jumped the shark?
Well, the truth of the matter is I left the show after the seventh season, as did Ron Howard. The show ran for 4 more years after that. So, and one of the reasons I left was I felt, and this is before they had coined that phrase, one of the reasons I left was I felt that the quality of the scripts and, you know, the shows that were being done was not of the same level that we had reached. And I thought it was starting to go down. I didn't know that, you know, I didn't say, hey, the show's jumped the shark, because that term hadn't even been created yet. Yeah. But I did feel that I was frustrated that, I mean, that was one of the reasons. You know, there were others, you know, you knew you were getting typecast, and I was young, and I didn't want to get so stuck. And there were other reasons, but a big part of it was, you know, and also I'd been doing the character for 7 years. And so, but I think the fact I was aware, and now at what point, it wasn't really an episode. It was somewhere in that sixth and midway through the sixth season into the seventh season, where it just felt like on a consistent level, it was the scripts were not what they had been.
Well, look, I'm not asking for specifics, and I'm not being, you know, overly nosy here. But in general, did you have freedom? Did you have financial freedom to be able to leave and not immediately going to another gig, or was there a scramble to find work after you left?
Well, I did have a little bit of, you know, I felt I had a little bit of freedom or a little bit of a cushion to, I thought I had a cushion, because what happened was I had a really, you know, I had bought one home, and then I sold a home, and then I bought another home, and I bought my second home. It was in an area of Malibu, and I always figured, well, if, you know, things, and I told my agents I didn't want to do another TV series for a while. You know, I just wanted to try to do film and theater, and I didn't even, you know, want to do a series, because I just felt that there was a certain limit. You know, back then, dramas weren't like they are today, where they're doing wonderful things on dramas with almost like movie quality, and it wasn't like that back then. And the series worked for drama. Comedies were good, but I wanted to branch out and do a lot of different things. So I felt, you know, if I had to after a while and I wasn't getting the work right away, I could always sell the house and, you know, and be okay for a while and move to a more modest area, that kind of thing. But then, what happened is, you know, Murphy's Law, right. The entire area of where my home was, which encompassed 250 homes, was up in a mesa, and the whole thing started to slide. Oh. And therefore, we had to move out. The homes were being condemned all around, and my house was now worth 10 cents on the dollar. Oh. So the cushion that I thought I had sort of went away very quickly. Wow. And then it did become a scramble, and things changed dramatically, you know. You can never plan and predict, you know, that's for sure.
Yeah. Well, if you're just joining us, we have a few moments left with Don Most, and you know his work from Happy Days as Ralph Mouth, and you should know his work for what he's doing now. He's a wonderful performer and singer. And Don, just getting back to it for a second, did you decide to leave before Ron left, or no, simultaneously?
It was the same year. We both, you know, Ron wanted to really direct, and I think he had asked ABC to give him a chance to direct, and he'd come back, you know, because our contracts were up, and he said he would renew, you know, if they gave him a chance to direct, but they weren't willing to do it, and that was, you know, one of the reasons he left, because then NBC gave him a chance to direct, so yeah. so
Boy,
so
they should have
that.
Boy, they should have given him a chance to direct. I mean, wow.
Yeah, I think so. Don't you think?
did anybody come up to you? Did either Gary or Jerry? Was Jerry Paris was still in the picture at that point, right?
Yeah,
he went all the way, all the way to the end. I think. Did anybody come up to you and say, "Hey, guys, not a good idea. This is a hit show, and
right,
and we're here as a team." I mean, what was the sentiment around the older guys? And when I say the older guys, I mean Jerry Paris,
yeah,
and even Tom Bosley for that matter, and Gary Marshall. What was their attitude towards you quitting?
Well, the only one that I really was having contact with at that time was Jerry, because the show was on hiatus, so I wasn't around the set or anything, so I wasn't seeing Gary, and Gary didn't call me or anything, and I wasn't seeing Tom, and I don't remember having conversations. I might have, but Jerry and I were such good friends that he talked to me in that manner, I think trying to convince me to come back, but he understood also where I was coming from, so he understood both sides. And similarly to Ron, I told everyone I would come back if they gave me a chance. And they were offering me a pretty big raise, and I said, forget the raise. I'll come back without a raise, but just give me an opportunity to do like a TV movie on ABC or a supporting role in a feature film at Paramount, which was one of the, where we shot it, and they were part, the production company. So I said, let me have some other acting opportunities and I'll come back, do the show, and you don't even have to give me a raise. And they weren't willing to do that. So, it was that was sort of what was the last part of the decision, And Jerry understood, but he also was trying to convince me to come back. He saw both sides of the coin.
Well, it would have been a much better last couple of seasons with obviously you and Ron, and I can't imagine when they were in that decision making mode to keep it going. It just had to be, it was money, and I guess as long as they had Henry, they had a show in their minds. They had it all going.
That's right.
And was any of that? Did it ultimately end because it got canceled, or did it ultimately end because Henry said, hey, it's over?
I'm not exactly sure, because I wasn't around then. So I don't know if it was a combination. I think it might have been a combination. The ratings held up for a while, but then after, those last year or two, they were going down, and so it might have been a mutual decision. I can't really speak to it because I wasn't around. So
ABC didn't really do that with Henry. Now that I think of it, I'm trying to think of an example of where they helped their stars get other gigs. And I know there's some examples, but Henry was doing things like Heroes. If you remember, he did a movie, Heroes, and
yeah, sure do. And there was the I can't remember the name of that one that he did. They did not really help us do other things. They certainly, like I mentioned with Ron and myself, they didn't. And I can't remember if Henry did a TV movie or anything like that. I don't think so for ABC.
No.
But later on, you did see examples of stars on certain network shows and getting other opportunities on that network to do different kinds of things. And I think they realized that was a good way to keep their stars, happy, content, or willing to, work with them more and more.
No matter how you slice it, what an experience, lasting experience to be seen that many people.
Yeah.
Yeah, just amazing. You have to be looked back fondly.
I know. It was an amazing experience. I'm incredibly grateful and thankful that I had that to work with the kind of people I did and be on a show with that kind of success. Just, it's surreal and dreamlike sometimes to me still.
Well, listen, you know, congratulations on all your success, but congratulations on the success of the singing career and your performing. It's just everything I hear about it. And again, congratulations for all of that. Can you give us a social media site or a website that people can kind of follow what you're doing?
Yeah, my website is donnymost.com. And then, you know, on Facebook, there's under Don Most, there's a page, like a fan page that says Concert Tour under Don Most, and one that is a personal page. And then my Twitter handle is Most_Don.
And one quick plug, and maybe we can do a whole show on this, but your Mostly Swing is the name of the CD.
Mostly Swinging, yeah.
Mostly Swinging.
I'm really excited about the CD because it just is great. The arrangements, the musicians, the songs we picked. I'm so excited.
Hey, listen, thanks for your time here, and good luck, and congrats on everything going on.
Oh, yeah. Oh, thanks. Thanks again, Frank, for having me.
Don Most, everyone. You could see him June 2nd. At 254 West 54th Street, 54 Below. See Donnie Most sing and swing at Feinstein's, 54 Below. We will see you next time on Breaking It Down. This is Frank McKay.